ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
Deals. And Bonds hits one high. It's a deep. It is out of here. 7.56. Bonds stands alone.
There is no sport more obsessed with its past than Major League Baseball. And there is no institution that embodies that tortured relationship more than its Hall of Fame, a building that is both a temple of history and, in the case of Barry Bonds, the all-time home run king, a fortress against it. So today, as we await the final verdict on whether Bonds and Roger Clemens will be Hall of Famers, Jeff Passan explains who should be allowed through those pearly gates, how to deal with character clauses and performance-enhancing drugs, and how to save Cooperstown from itself. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, January 25th. This is ESPN Daily. So, Jeff Passan, I want to jump right into this with you because it's 6 p.m. today, Tuesday. We get something approaching resolution to the most heavily debated Hall of Fame vote we've ever seen, right? Is this close to you? We're talking about the class of 2022, the inductees on the table. Tell us what's at stake here.
This has been the asteroid coming for the Hall of Fame that we saw 15 years ago.
Yes.
And today it's going to hit. And what we're going to be left with is arguably the greatest hitter of all time, arguably one of the five greatest pitchers of all time, not being in the place that honors baseball history.
Yes, Jeff, and to be clear, I am grateful for the jobs the asteroid has created as well in this case, because talking about Barry Bonds, the greatest hitter that you just alluded to, and Roger Clemens, the greatest pitcher, arguably, that you just alluded to, and Sammy Sosa, and then, by the way, in their first year on the ballot as well, Alex Rodriguez and David Ortiz. I mean, it begs the question of how this entire process, how this democracy actually functions, right? How do we get here as a matter of procedure?
So you go back, Pablo, three quarters of a century, and when the Hall of Fame was created, it was entrusted in the writers. Baseball Writers Association of America place the most worthy candidates into the hall. In order to do so, you needed to reach a 75% threshold, which, as we've learned with Bonds and Clemens and anybody else who has some sort of a wart on his resume, can be a difficult thing to reach. You generally can't get three out of four sports writers to agree that the grass is green or that tacos are good. But,
unless it's Bruce Springsteen cutting that grass and eating those tacos.
That's exactly right. And Bruce Springsteen is definitely a Langua guy because he knows good things.
Agree.
You know, the Hall of Fame, there was always an element of intrigue to it. There was always an element of controversy. But by and large, the writers have gotten it right. They've done a pretty good job of placing the best of the best into the Hall of Fame and keeping the Hall of Very Good Guys out. What happened is that it stopped being about baseball and started being about ethics, morals, and these very complicated issues that in most of the cases involve performance-enhancing drugs, and in one case involve something completely different. There are going to be about 400 or so ballots cast this year. If you are someone who has been in the Baseball Writers Association of America for 10 years, then you earn a Hall of Fame vote and you keep it as long as you are not out of the business for a decade. and you've got 10 years if you are a player to make it to that 75% threshold. Your clock starts 5 years after you retire. So Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens retired in 2007, or last played at least in 2007. That five-year period, the first year on the ballot was in 2013, and this is year number 10 right now, and the clock is ticking.
So, Jeff, we have this House of Representatives-sized electorate of baseball writers, and I mean, look, you're a baseball writer. You're our baseball writer. Please share with our audience your personal history with voting for this very prestigious institution.
When I got my first Hall of Fame vote, comes in the mail, it's in an envelope, it's on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, like it's a very simple thing. I looked at it and it was like I had found the Holy Grail. I was so excited. It's just one of those cool moments in this job, you know. You see the Hall of Fame. I went to Cooperstown. I went to summer camp in upstate New York.
Oh, so, man. I've made that childhood pilgrimage, too. Absolutely.
Yeah. Every summer, we'd go there. It was one of the most awe-inspiring moments of my childhood, seeing the wall of baseball caps in the gift shop and all the different things that were there. This place, it mesmerized me, and I get to vote. I get to be part of this. It was very cool. And then I got old and jaded, and I started to recognize that the ethos of the Hall of Fame right now, the aim of the Hall of Fame is to have people leave that building with that very childlike idea of what baseball is like, even though there are horrible racists who are enshrined, even though there are people who have been credibly accused of sexual misconduct, who have beaten their wives, who have done numerous just awful things. And what I saw, Pablo, as time went on, is that the Hall was starting to treat Barry Bonds and other performance-enhancing drug users as the sorts of pariahs who did not belong inside these hallowed walls. These hallowed walls that already were completely filled with people who you could objectively say were total scumbags. Like,
it is the thing of like Cooperstown is heaven and here are the pearly gates and you, Jeff Passan, combined to form one giant Voltron of St. Peter.
That's exactly right. And I was getting disillusioned more and more with the Hall of Fame not coming out and publicly saying, hey, we recognize that performance-enhancing drug users are part of this history that we are trying to preserve. And history is ugly, and history is messy, and history involves characters who make decisions that may not align with yours morally or ethically, but they are the decisions that were made, and they are part of the game. In 2017, it came to a head. It was November. I remember looking in my inbox that day and seeing a letter from the Baseball Hall of Fame's email address, but signed by Joe Morgan, the great baseball player, the longtime announcer, and somebody who had been vociferous in his objection publicly to performance-enhancing drug use.
Hall of Fame second baseman Joe Morgan sent a letter Tuesday to Hall of Fame voters urging them not to vote for steroid users. Morgan wrote, "We hope the day never comes when known steroid users are voted into the Hall of Fame. They cheated. Steroid users don't belong here."
He was subtweeting Barry Bonds and everyone else who used performance-enhancing drugs and saying, "You are not worthy to join these hallowed halls." And let me just say this. I get it. I get why somebody would look at PED use as being problematic. It's cheating. Like, it is actually cheating. You can't deny that. Even somebody who sits here and tries to make the argument and stand up for the reason that Barry Bonds should be in the Hall of Fame, I can't deny they cheated. But you look at the course of history in Major League Baseball. You look at the fact that players coming back from World War II love them some amphetamines. And and that Willie Mays, who's seen as, you know, Babe Ruth, the greatest player of all time, Willie Mays and Barry Bonds are right there with him. Willie Mays loved him some red juice. Like, he would take amphetamines, put it into a drink, and slug it before the game. There were conversations I had with players. I remember with Brian McCray, longtime Kansas City Royal and New York Met, told me a story once about how there were two different coffee pots in Major League Baseball clubhouses. One of them was leaded and one of them was unleaded. And the one that was unleaded was just your regular caffeinated coffee. And the one that was leaded was loaded with amphetamines. The idea that Joe Morgan played in this era where guys were hopped up on drugs that absolutely enhanced their performance, and that he was going to sit here and try and make the argument that despite the fact that there were PED users in the Hall of Fame already, that the Hall is no place for PED users. I saw that as the ultimate in hypocrisy and thought, you know what? I don't want to be part of this process anymore. If the process is going to be bastardized to the point where I don't think it's representative of what the Baseball Hall of Fame should look like.
And so you, Jeff Passan, who generates so many great stories out of your inbox, I come to realize at this moment.
Inbox, DMs, all of it.
Yes. So when the late, great Joe Morgan, Mr. Super Unleaded here, slides into that inbox, your response as a voter with real power here is to do what?
Well, first I write a column because, you know, you got to take advantage. Like when, you know, when Joe Morgan gives you lemon, you make some hard lemonade out of that. I wrote a very self-aggrandizing column about how I wasn't voting for the Hall anymore. And listen, I am certainly not above using the debate that the Hall of Fame generates to get my opinion out there. I don't like living in a world where museums whitewash history. And that's what feels like is happening with Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens and is going to happen with Alex Rodriguez and Manny Ramirez and Sammy Sosa going forward.
So, Jeff, let's get it out on the record here then, because after this decades-long, multi-generational campaign against Barry Bonds, what do you think he's going to receive in his inbox when he gets the news at 6 p.m. Eastern today?
So, it's very interesting what a cottage industry the Baseball Hall of Fame voting has become. There's a man named Ryan Thibodeau, and you can follow him on Twitter at not Mr. Tibbs, T-I-B-B-S. And Ryan Thibodeau took it upon himself like almost a decade ago now to compile every single public ballot that exists with Baseball Hall of Fame voting and break it down in crazy detail. And so when I look at this spreadsheet that he's got out there publicly, I can see that Barry Bonds right now, in terms of public ballots, would be in. Like, he's over the 75% threshold. Mm. Roger Clemens is over the 75% threshold. I can see that Barry Bonds actually has gained some votes from people who didn't vote for him last year and has lost one as well. I also, though, know, because Ryan Thibodeau has done this, that there's a pattern that every year Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens look like they might sneak into the Hall of Fame, but then all of the voters who do not publicly put their ballots out there end up bringing him down back into the 60 to 65% range, which is where I anticipate both Bonds and Clemens are going to end up this year. So no, listen, I hope I am wrong. I hope that this podcast ends up on freezing cold takes, because that would mean that Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, who both deserve to be our Hall of Famers, I just don't think it's happening.
So this existential debate between church versus museum, Jeff, how would you deal with the Barry Bonds question in a scenario in which he actually does get inducted? Like, if you're running the Hall of Fame, you have not excommunicated yourself, you're actually running the thing in this hypothetical, how are you honoring this man?
This, to me, is the ideal scenario, because what these plaques that are hanging on the walls do is allow you to tell the story of baseball. And in this column I wrote, I wrote a fake plaque for Barry Bonds. And this, I promise you, is in the style of what the rest of the hall plaques look like. They don't use pronouns. I don't know why. Barry Lamar Bonds, Pittsburgh, NL, San Francisco, NL, 1986 to 2007. Baseball's home run king with 762, won 7 MVP awards, and walked more than any player in history. With fearsome left-handed swing, set single-season home run record with 73 and redefined hitting for a generation. Use of performance-enhancing drugs muddled accomplishments and epitomized MLB's steroid era. Hero and villain simultaneously, possessed uncommon power-speed combination made even better by eye that helped lead NL in on-base percentage 10 times.
That's pretty good, Jeff. That's a pretty good plaque, not gonna lie.
Well, here's why it's good. It's not good because I wrote it. It's good because everything in there is ridiculous.
Yes, exactly.
Like, think of the person that we're talking about here.
It's absurd.
Yeah, I mean, he led baseball history in home runs, single season home runs, walked more than anyone else, won 7 MVP awards, 10-time leader in on-base percentage, and oh, by the way, he's involved in the scandal of scandals toward the end of the 20th century and going into the 21st century for a sport that has been ridden with scandals throughout its history. Barry Bonds is the plaque that I want to read there. I want to read him, and I want to read Babe Ruth. And there really, frankly, aren't many others who are as compelling as Barry Bonds. So not having that in there, how do you tell that story, Pablo? How do you tell the story of baseball without Barry Bonds?
Right, and how do you tell the story of baseball, incidentally, without the guys I need to ask you about after this break, like Roger Clemens and Alex Rodriguez? And oh yeah, by the way, Curt Schilling's here too, so we got to get to him.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Jeff, I don't know how often it is at this point that Roger Clemens gets reduced to, like, the undercard on any argument about baseball greatness, but here he is, right? The guy who won 7 Cy Youngs, 354 wins, third all-time in strikeouts, pitched until he was 45 years old, but of course, the postscript on his career is that within a year or so of his retirement, we see these allegations that he used steroids, that he used human growth hormone, that he then repeatedly denied all of it, including while under oath at an actual congressional hearing, incidentally, which led to actual perjury charges, even though he was ultimately found not guilty. So the broad story arc there, Jeff. It does have parallels, of course, to Bonds. And like Bonds, he also got 61% of the vote last year, perhaps not coincidentally. What are the key differences here as you assess Rogers' candidacy versus Barry's?
Voters almost treat them as twins, right?
Apparently.
Like, if you vote for Barry, you vote for Roger. If you vote for Roger, you vote for Barry. I think that they're two very different people, though. And you look at what Barry Bonds meant. Barry Bonds was everything to people in San Francisco. Like, in the Bay Area to this day, it's difficult to find somebody who does not stand up for Barry Bonds and look at him not as a pariah, but as a beacon. Roger Clemens is almost a man without a country. And remember, he spent the first half of his career as an ace for the Boston Red Sox, but it looked like he was falling off a little, dwindling. And then he goes to Toronto and has back-to-back Cy Young years. Then he goes to the Yankees in his late 30s and is still a stud. And he ends up going back home to Houston. He wasn't a journeyman because a journeyman is just middling, but he took a journey, man. and it was one of those that is just so filled with ridiculous things. Not like the outlandish performance of Bonds, where he's breaking records right and left, but just the longevity and the fact that...
Jeff, the fact that he won a Cy Young at every one of those stops that you just described over decades.
Yeah, the fact that he won 354 games, Pablo, the fact that he threw almost 5,000 innings. I mean, Roger Clemens was a marvel in many regards. You know, you can sit here and say about others, you know, maybe without performance-enhancing drugs, he wouldn't have been. No, Roger Clemens was that guy before it. And I've never been of the argument that some proffer for Bonds and Clemens that they were Hall of Famers before they started using PEDs. So that's the standard. That's the threshold. I think the one thing to me that ties Clemens and Bonds together most is just how unnecessary it was. And that's the saddest, that to me is the most tragic part of this whole story. It's that neither Barry Bonds nor Roger Clemens needed to use performance-enhancing drugs to be great. They did so because greatness was the drug that they were really trying to chase, and the PEDs were the way that they could get it most easily.
So if that's what aligns Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens together, that unnecessary pursuit of edges wherever possible, what does Sammy Sosa look like to you, Jeff? Because this is a 7-time All-Star, 609 home runs to his credit, 9th all-time. He had 60 or more in a season 3 times, including that one season where he combined with Mark McGwire, of course, to basically save the sport that you cover. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously PED suspicions have hounded him for as long as we opened our eyes to that entire dynamic with McGwire. But this is also his final year of eligibility. He only got 17% of the vote last year compared to the 61% of Bonds and Clemens. So it seems like he's definitely not going to be in now. Should he be in now?
I've never voted for Sammy Sosa, actually. And I never voted for Sammy Sosa based on the baseball merits, Pablo, more than the performance-enhancing drug issue. Sammy Sosa was an absolute shooting star. Like, the peak was really, really good. It's just the rest of it that wasn't. And I was always a small hall guy. So you have different voters. you have people who look at maybe borderline players, guys who were really good for a while but weren't the greatest, or guys who were great for a short period of time but didn't have that longevity. And they say, you know what? I think that it should be a big Hall of Fame. I do not think the Hall of Fame should be big. I think the Hall of Fame...
That's the basketball Hall of Fame's approach, incidentally, expansionism.
Yeah, yeah. I think the Hall of Fame should be reserved for the players who you look at and say, there's no doubt in my mind that he was the best or one of the best in the sport at the time he was playing, and he did it for a really long time. Like, there are rare exceptions. I think Sandy Koufax is a rare exception, for example. God forbid Mike Trout never played a game again. I think he would be an exception. But by and large, I look for both peak and longevity from my Hall of Famers. And Sammy Sosa, to me, was always just a peak guy. The peak was spectacular, don't get me wrong. And anybody who votes for him, I don't begrudge him or her that vote. Just not my cup of tea.
So then the other name I need to ask you about here, Jeff, is, of course, Curt Schilling. Because he got 71% of the vote last year. That's just 16 votes shy of enshrinement. And this now is also his final year on the writer's ballot. He is, objectively speaking, one of the greatest pitchers we have ever seen. But the circumstances around him are decidedly different, right? And that's because of the many, let's call them, insensitive opinions he's expressed over the years. And in what many saw as, I think, gamesmanship, Curt Schilling explicitly asked to be taken off the ballot for this year entirely, saying this, quote, "I will not participate in the final year of voting. I'm requesting to be removed from the ballot. I'll defer to the Veterans Committee and men whose opinions actually matter and who are in position to actually judge a player."
Right.
End quote. So this matrix of criteria that you've outlined here, I wonder how he fits into it. What do you make of where Curt Schilling stands right now?
I'm doing like the, I believe it's Lauren Conrad eye roll gif right now. Like, give me a break. Honestly, that's Curt Schilling doing Curt Schilling things. It's him being a blowhard. It's kind of what he does. And it's kind of why he's in the position that he's in right now. Because when I look at Curt Schilling's baseball resume, Pablo, to me, he's kind of a no-doubt Hall of Famer.
Yes.
His peak was really, really good. It happened in his mid to late 30s when he was with the Arizona Diamondbacks and with the Boston Red Sox. He happened to be on the same pitching staff as Randy Johnson, who's a clear first ballot, you know, never a doubt Hall of Famer, and finished second in some Cy Young Award voting in those years with Arizona, then went and finished second in 2004 with Boston. And of course, he is famously tremendous in the playoffs. It wasn't just the Bloody Sock game. I mean, he was a dude throughout his entire time in the postseason. And that counts for something.
And to be clear, Jeff, he had no steroid suspicions at any point in his career. Is that right?
Not just that. He was outspoken against steroids. He was one of the guys who would call out PED users. So it's almost like Curt Schilling was positioning himself to be a hero on the ballot. Mm. Then he started talking about transgendered people, and he started posting memes. And
so many memes.
Curt Schilling finds himself in a mess. He shared this meme on social media referencing transgender people.
Schilling commented beneath the post, "A man is a man no matter what they call themselves. Now you need laws telling us differently. Pathetic."
Just last August, he tweeted out a controversial comment linking Nazis to Muslim extremists.
Curt Schilling is your uncle who loves posting things on Facebook, except he was actually good at baseball.
But in terms of content moderation there, Jeff, should the content of Curt Schilling's arguably indefensible opinions about the world be a reason to keep him out of the Hall of Fame?
Okay, so let's look at something that's become known as the character clause. There is one sentence that is sent to voters outlining what the criteria is for a Hall of Fame vote. Quote, "Voting shall be based upon the player's record, playing ability, integrity, sportsmanship, character, and contribution to the teams on which the player played." That's it. That is the only guidance that the Hall of Fame gives voters. And what's happened is that some of those words in the middle, integrity, sportsmanship, but especially character, has been weaponized.
Mm.
And the weaponization of that has manifested itself with performance-enhancing drug users and has manifested itself with Curt Schilling. Now, I completely understand why people would look at what Curt Schilling said, recognize how abhorrent it is, and not want to give him the joy, pleasure, or honor of being in the National Baseball Hall of Fame. I get that. When I was voting, I could never make that leap. There are manifold, horrendous people whose opinions dovetail with Curt Schilling already in the Hall of Fame. And the notion that because we are a more sensitive people, because we are hopefully a more enlightened people now and don't stand for things like that, that that doesn't mean Curt Schilling should be excluded because of the merits of his baseball career. Can you appreciate and enjoy the art while separating it from the artist who performed it? And that's what I try to do with Curt Schilling. The art, oh my God, watching Curt Schilling pitch and watching his splitter dive and watching him paint fastballs in every corner of the zone, it was just a marvelous thing as a baseball fan to behold. But the artist, yeah, not so great.
Yeah, Jeff, it does feel like his Hall of Fame plaque, if we're going to offer unsolicited recommendations for artistic vision here, it should be in the style of one of those Facebook meme-like comic strips.
you have the perfect font right there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, big Comic Sans energy coursing through that part of the exhibit. But, Jeff, after the break, I want to ask you what you, Jeff Passan, museum curator, what do you even begin to do with, like, Alex Rodriguez and David Ortiz?
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Jeff, I want to turn now to the guys who just made their debut on this Hall of Fame ballot that you no longer vote on, because Alex Rodriguez and David Ortiz are two guys who, again, like, seem to be colleagues in the baseball sense, but also have enjoyed and suffered from variously very different narratives around their alleged usage of performance-enhancing drugs over time. And I want to start here with A-Rod, because the case for him is blindingly obvious, right? 3 MVPs, 14 All-Star teams. He's the youngest guy to ever reach both 500 home runs and 600 home runs for good measure. But he tried to handle his own performance-enhancing drug use in a conspicuously different fashion. How would you explain the A-Rod saga for us?
Yeah, A-Rod tried to fight Major League Baseball and got his ass kicked. Like, there's really no, I mean, there's no other way to put it.
A record suspension tonight for baseball star Alex Rodriguez over his use of performance-enhancing drugs.
An independent arbitrator slapping him with a 162-game ban for violating the league's drug policy.
And in classic A-Rod fashion, he's expected, what, to fight back?
Oh, he's going to fight this. He's not going away quietly. He's going to bring this into federal court and hopefully try to stop this suspension.
He fought the law, and the law won. He got the longest performance-enhancing drug suspension in baseball history. And I think from the early returns, it's interesting, because let's remember, Barry Bonds never tested positive. Roger Clemens never tested positive. Alex Rodriguez, there was some suspicion. He ended up getting caught and got suspended.
He also does seem to be a special case insofar as he publicly acknowledged that PEDs were a form of cheating.
I did take a banned substance. You know, for that, I'm very sorry and deeply regretful. And since then, I've proved to myself and to everyone that I don't need any of that.
But then, you know, went on and continued to cheat after that.
I mean, he is the child who apologizes and then does the same shit right after again.
Jeff, I'm looking forward to my daughter telling me, look, it was a real loosey-goosey time when I told you I didn't just smear poop on the wall of my bedroom.
Oh, I hope you're past that, Pablo.
Yeah, we're close. We're very, very close. But okay, how do you put the case for David Ortiz up in contrast to A-Rod, Jeff? Because David Ortiz, Big Papi, right? Like, he has none of the villainy that has visited Alex Rodriguez's branding, right? He is a 10-time All-Star Ortiz's. He's a 3-time World Series champion. He's beloved widely, but there is the thing that happened in 2009 when it gets reported in the New York Times that he had tested positive years earlier when tests were still being kept secret by Major League Baseball. And so it doesn't feel like baseball, the community of the sport, held that against him, really, or at least not in the same way that they have with others. Why do you think that is?
Because baseball writers are a bunch of suckers.
Because he's so jolly.
Here's the thing. David Ortiz is... if not this year, and I think he's going to go in this year, but if not this year, he's going to go into the Hall of Fame next year because he was awesome and because he's a nice guy. So, like, honestly, it's as simple as that. He had his moments. What he did after the Boston Marathon bombing.
Yeah, no, the whole, this is our f-ing city.
This is our f-ing city. And nobody gonna dictate our freedom. Stay strong. Thank you.
Yeah, hard to vote against that specifically.
Yeah, I mean, there's that. You have this person who was present for the exorcism of the curse of the Bambino and who stuck around and won another World Series in 2007 and won another World Series in 2013 in which he hit like 700 and struck out once in 28 plate appearances in the World Series. It was the most dominant stretch of baseball from a single player I think I've ever seen in the postseason. So you have all these things in favor of David Ortiz. I think there's also different gradations of positive tests, right? David Ortiz is positive, which has never been confirmed by anyone, was selectively leaked to the New York Times, which, you know, shout out Michael Schmidt for getting the scoops, but we know nothing about that. It was his test that was leaked. It was Sammy Sosa's test that was leaked. I had one person when I was talking about David Ortiz to the effect of, you know, it almost seems like somebody had it out for successful Dominican baseball players. Of all the names that get leaked, those are the ones. And so I think David Ortiz over time built up this goodwill that shows that in baseball writers' heads, they can be malleable about the PED issue. The egregiousness of not including Bonds and Clemens because they denied it more vociferously than David Ortiz, who still, by the way, to this day does deny it. It has continued to and has not abated from that.
Yes, he does.
I've never understood how the difference between a denial and a firmer denial is the difference between a Hall of Famer and someone who's not worthy of induction.
Well, Jeff, look, to boil it down to its simplest form here, it sounds like given the rubric you've laid out in terms of who's not going to get in definitively and who will seemingly be on the verge of getting in, it seems like it's about just who all of these voters like personally. And I wonder, what do you do about that, right? If that is the issue underpinning this whole conversation we've had, how do you fix that?
I think if you ask the public, the answer is obvious. And the public's response would be you take the vote away from the writers. And you know what? part of me sits there and goes, yeah, that's about right. But then let's look at who the vote goes to. Does the vote go to the broadcasters who are employees of the teams? No, probably not. Does the vote go to the players who played against these guys? Well, if you want to see votes for friends, I mean, votes for people who they like, give it to the players. Like the standard and the threshold that the players have
again,
just is not where the writers has been. But to me, this demands an expertise that I just don't know exists among Hall of Fame voters anymore. And that's part of what you get when you have a 400 person electorate. You're going to get some people who, as much time as they believe they're spending on it, simply don't know what's actually going on inside of the game. So as much as I think the writers are at fault here, as much as I think that Barry Bonds isn't in the Hall of Fame because Major League Baseball took an odious perspective very early on in the steroid era about how they were going to treat it. That perspective was then mimicked and parroted by the Hall of Fame, and the entirety of that narrative bore itself into enough writers' heads that they could keep players from reaching that 75% threshold. When you look at it from that perspective, yeah, the writers in a way have failed, but I still sit here and think to myself, they're the best of a bad bunch of options.
Yeah, no, Jeff, to mimic and parrot Winston Churchill now, it's that line, right? Democracy is the worst form of government, except for all the others that have been tried.
There we go.
Jeff Passan, our champion of voting rights, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, except for baseball writers.
And for more on the 2022 Baseball Hall of Fame vote, go check out the Outside the Lines series, Enshrine or Decline, Tuesday and Wednesday at 1:40 p.m. Eastern on SportsCenter. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.